Raising the Bets is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give. You're listening to Raising the Bets, a family podcast of pirates and penguins. We're a Catholic couple raising five kids outside of Boston. Join us as we share the joys and challenges of marriage, homeschool, and our adventures near and far as we make sense of the world and experience the best parts of our culture. I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
No, we were not canceled due to budget cuts. There was not a show last week, as you probably noticed, or maybe you didn't notice. And you're wondering why this show is suddenly showing up in your podcast feed. We went on vacation, and as is wise in these days of the internet, we didn't tell anyone in advance to our vast audience of podcast listeners that we were not going to be here. So I apologize if that was unexpected. But yes, we went on vacation.
Indeed, we did.
In these COVID times, we managed to find a way to go away safely. We went to this lake house that is technically in Maine. So the lake is called Great East Lake in Acton, Maine, and it sits right on the border between New Hampshire and Maine.
Yes.
So, and we've been there before.
A couple times.
First time was what, 5 years ago?
2015 and then 2017.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's nice. It's a lake house. We're able to get access to it through the generosity of a friend who's a caretaker for it, and we're able to get in there. It's nicer than we ought to have reason to be able to go to.
Yes, much.
I mean, you love it because it's what? Because it's airier. It's
much bigger than our house.
It's bigger than our house.
It's a lot bigger than our house.
Okay. It's multi-levels.
It's four levels built into the side of a hill, and the backyard is the lake.
Yes, it's right on the water. And there's a nice deck that overlooks the water.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
And there's a dock, there's kayaks, there's a motorboat. And it's tons of windows. You leave the windows open all the time. It's airy. It's
cool.
It's cool. Well, it can be cool.
We had a couple of hot days, but
yeah. I mean, we had a couple of days where it was in the 90s, but more than a couple. But being at the lake does not feel like the 90s.
Right. Even when it's in the 90s, it feels like the 80s, maybe.
Right. It's just something about being at the lake with the breeze, the water. It just cools everything down, makes things feel cooler. So if people are all familiar with the restrictions related to coronavirus and all this sort of travel between states, because as you may know, we live in Massachusetts. So there's a agreement that between Massachusetts and several other states, including New Hampshire, where the current infection rate is low, that residents can travel between them, back and forth between the state without having to quarantine. However, Maine, technically, if you come from Massachusetts, you're supposed to quarantine for 2 weeks or take a negative test. Well, we didn't take a negative test, but we were technically in Maine, but like only the house, we only went to the house in Maine. Everything else we did, we went to the store three times to get groceries. Those were in New Hampshire. So we were quarantined in Maine.
So while we were in Maine, we were quarantined and not having any contact with anybody in Maine.
Right.
We were at the house or in a boat on the lake.
Away from people.
And when we went to the store, we crossed the state line into New Hampshire, which has no problem with people from Massachusetts right. being there.
Frankly, people are still like, there are a lot of people who aren't wearing masks and stuff like that. So that's...
Although I will have to say that all of the grocery stores New Hampshire that we went to were asking people to wear masks. And in fact, the Hannafords had masks that they were handing out to people right. as they walked in.
They were requiring people to put them on. The little... general store near us that were near the house, there were people both times we went in, people who were not wearing masks at all. So
I did not see them.
Yeah, but all of the employees were wearing them, and there were signs and stuff like that. It was fine. It was fine. There was no issues. We didn't go out to dinner. We didn't go any attractions. Frankly, the whole point of the lake house sort of vacation, we go to two different kinds of vacations. It was either go to a place and stay there and relax, or go to a place where we're going to be visiting things, a lot of different places. And this is a go and stay someplace, and this is the perfect year for that. And we planned this before.
Right, we planned it at the beginning of the year.
Right, before, like, January, February.
Well, in fact, actually, my parents were supposed to come up and spend the week with us in Maine at the lake, and they did not feel comfortable traveling, and so they sadly did not join us, which we missed having them.
It would have been fun.
It would have been really nice to have them. But hopefully some other time in the future that will happen. But yeah, this was the perfect quarantine vacation because we
did not have to interact. It's like a perfect introvert's vacation too, because we didn't have to interact with anybody other than our family.
It was relaxed. It was peaceful.
No iPads for the kids.
The kids didn't have iPads or TV.
I was saying I didn't watch any TV except for, and we'll talk about the later on in entertainment, but I didn't watch any TV except the stuff I needed to watch for Secrets of, Doctor Who and Secrets of Star Trek.
I didn't watch anything.
Yeah.
I brought some books and I read and I drew and I painted and...
Oh, I did watch one thing now that I think about it. But yeah, right. I read a lot of books, iPad game, which I'll talk about a bit, but yeah, just hanging out with the kids. We played D&D
on one day.
So the entire week was sunny and warm, no rain until the last day, the last full day. And even that was only cloudy for till mid afternoon. And then it was sunny again. But, so it was, and it was a little cool. So we didn't do any swimming and we swam every day other than that. And, so on the last day, we finally got around to playing D&D, and we had a blast. We did another great day of campaigning, and they would just do it. They would want to do it every day. I have to prepare as the dungeon master. You have to kind of prepare and know what's coming up in order to be able to anticipate and stuff. So I only can prepare so much, so that's enough. But it was a lot of fun. I'm a little easy on the rules, especially since they're a little on the young side for D&D. I'm not a real stickler for certain rules, and sometimes the monsters roll twice to make sure that they don't actually kill off any of the characters. Like, oh, that's actually a critical hit. I don't think I will kill my 7-year-old's character and cause her to fall into tears. But we have fun, and they're really enjoying it.
Yeah, and I took a nap.
And you took a nap.
I did.
Well, that was the other thing is, some of the other things we did, so like I said, we swim every day, which they have a beautiful dock and it's a really nice lake area, and everyone's swimming has been so much better than it has been. Sophie and Bella swim right out to the dock and swim back, like the floating dock, and no problems there. Lucy would wear a life vest, but she would swim out, no problems. Anthony.
Oh, this poor kid. He accidentally left his bathing suit at home.
Yes.
And so he did not want to go swimming in his shorts. It took a couple of days and some bribery.
Yes, we have money. Dollars. I will give you $2 if you go swimming.
That was me. And because I did not, he was not happy. He was moping around while everyone else was swimming. He was moping around unhappy, but he just couldn't quite get over his aversion to swimming in shorts. I'm not sure why, but
right, because it's just not the thing. Shorts are not a swimsuit.
I offered to pay him if he would just try it, and then another day I offered to pay him if he would try the kayak.
Yeah, and both times worked. And after that, he was.
And then after two bribes, and that's all it took. And after that, he was fine swimming.
Yeah, I wish we'd just thought of it earlier, so he could have not had that couple of days of moping and not swimming. Now Ben, he took to the water like a fish. Like,
it was pretty impressive.
It was amazing. So he's like, "Can I try the kayak?" Like, he just out of the blue. I'm like, "Okay." Like, I wasn't gonna do it because I'm not I wasn't a huge fan. Like, the only time I ever kayaked before, I had trouble. So I'm like, I'm not, if they're not going to push, I'm not going to go for it. But he's like, can I try the kayak? And it's like, okay, bud. And so we get out there and he's in the kayak and I'm kind of holding on to the rope to make sure that he's balanced and stuff. He's like, yeah, I'm good. And he's like, boop, gone. Like, down the lake, comes back, he's kayaking back and forth, like a expert. And he's like, I'm pretty good at this. I'm like, yes, you are. And then Lucy gets a kayak out.
She did.
And she's kayaking.
Little tiny Lou. I'm like, it was great.
And then I'm like, geez, I gotta get a kayak out and start going. And you know what? It was actually pretty, these kayaks today, they're pretty easy to use, than better than they used to be. The only thing is they didn't have enough back support for me, so I could only do for so long. But it was fun.
And Bella got one out too for a bit.
Oh, did she? I didn't see that. I missed that.
Yeah, she did a couple times.
Oh, yeah.
She was pretty.
That's right.
She was pretty good and comfy too.
Yeah.
Sophie did not want to try the kayak.
No, but Sophie she liked swimming.
But she was doing great at swimming.
Human body plunger, she called it. She would jump, like, instead of a cannonball, she would jump off the dock like a pencil dive, you know, straight in, and call it the human body plunger. I thought was hysterical because I would cannonball them and then Sophie would try to cannonball me and I'd say, that's more like a musket ball. Speaking of cannonball, there was the one time that I jumped in and forgot to take my glasses off.
I heard that from inside the house.
I was horrified because without glasses, I'm blind, but you'd have to be doing the driving and I have to wait to get glasses. Oh, it's just a mess. So I finally got one. Yelled at a child, get the goggles, to go get the goggles and bring them to me so I could look for them. And luckily it was an area off the dock where the bottom was clear. It was just stone and sand and not muck. Oh my gosh. And then actually once we had the goggles, I got out the snorkel. I spent a lot of time snorkeling and Ben snorkeling with me. That was a lot of fun. And you know what? I never realized, another thing that I could never used to be able to do. I couldn't manage to breathe through the thing without sucking in water somehow.
I can't snorkel.
This must have been a good snorkel. But I found out that I could swim on the surface for a lot longer. Like, I usually get tired when I'm trying to swim a long distance. But with the snorkel and the goggles, I could swim and not get tired, not like feel like I'm sinking.
That's like magic.
It is. And Ben was doing it. And he was doing it with the vest on for a while. And then he took the vest off because he wanted to do it like me. And he was doing great for a while. And then he got a little water in, started struggling. I heard him yelling, help. He actually saved himself, though. He managed to get to the dock. But then he had an asthma attack. And that was that.
Yeah, once he got some water into his lungs.
No more snorkeling.
Asthma attacks are scary, and so I don't blame him. Yeah. But.
Well, I mean, almost drowning is scary. I mean, he didn't almost drown, but you think it when you're in that situation.
Yeah.
So, poor guy. So but he was doing amazing. Like, he has come a long way in the last year to really his self-confidence in doing new things and encountering people. I mean, I think he's really ready to do like scouts again, you know, get into Boy Scouts. And that would be, it's so awesome to see him really kind of hitting a new phase of being, what is he, 11 now?
11.
Being 11. I mean, he's really on the cusp of this self-confident new time of his life. So I'm really excited about that. There's a motorboat there that we had the use of, although we only took it out a couple times. It's been a long time since I've had the sole responsibility of driving and maintaining, you know, controlling a boat. Driving a boat I have no problem with. It's just like an airplane. I could fly a plane. It's the landing that I have trouble with, and bringing the boat into the dock I had trouble with, because you don't want to. You gotta do it just right, so you just bump the dock. You don't hit it too hard, but also you don't hit it too soft, so then bounce off, and you have to bring the whole boat around again, and that sort of stuff. So I have to admit I had a little trouble bringing it into the dock and tying up the couple times I did it. But being out on the water, driving the boat, man, that takes me back years ago. When my sister Francesca got her first powerboat, big powerboat, like ocean powerboat, she wanted me to be like help her be the mate, and so she made me take a powerboat squadron course with her. Power squadron's like a club for boaters, I guess.
Okay.
And but they have classes that you can take to learn all the basics of navigation, the rules of the road, safety. It's actually really useful. I mean, if you buy a boat, there's a lot of information you really need to have to be safe out there. Like, you know, especially if you're in the on the ocean as opposed to on a lake.
Right.
But even on a lake, there's information you need about, what's that little buoy bopping over there for? Oh, that thing? That means don't go near there because there's rocks right under the water. You know, that sort of stuff. So I remembered all that stuff. But it was a lot of fun. The first time I went out was just me and the kids. And we went out and around the lake. And then you came the second time.
I did.
And we did like the on the big lake. I mean, the lake opens up and this is a big section. It's really windy though, so it's choppier. So we mm-hmm. went out there and took a tour of the lake. And then we came back and we went down. There's it's sort of like a river basin that goes off the other end, which we went down. We have to go really slow.
That was not quite so fun because it was just hot.
It was
that
hot.
Day.
Right.
And when we were going slow, there was no breeze and we were like in this sheltered area. So we weren't out on the big wide open lake where there was a breeze. So it was kind of unpleasantly warm.
I think that killed the enjoyment. But that's probably why we didn't go out on the boat again with the kids. Why they didn't ask me to go. Which I wouldn't have gone in there. And the nice thing is on the during the week, like on the weekends, it's kind of crazy, the lake.
It is.
It's like boats. It's like a highway. It's rush hour. But during the week, it's much quieter. I mean, there's still people because it's the summer, of course, but much less crowded during the week.
It's strikingly quiet in the midweek and strikingly loud on the weekends.
Yeah.
Like last night.
The hullabaloos were out.
Yeah. So, at midnight, they were out.
Driving up and down the lake.
Driving up and down, playing music and talking
fireworks.
Loudly and fireworks and everything. Yeah.
Yeah. And but even during the day, like the really loud radios as the motorboat roaring by and all that sort of stuff. Whereas during the week, I mean, you can hear the birds and the wind and the loons. Oh, the loons were awesome.
I love loons.
The loons, especially at night, the loons hooting at each other across the lake. And this week coincided with the Perseids, the meteor showers.
Yes. Bella did her astronomy merit badge this spring. Is it Zoom class? And so she's been really into astronomy. She has an app on her phone that helps her to identify stars, but she's really good. Like she hardly needs the app at all. She can find all of her favorite stars. She's really good.
Oh, that's Arcturus. That's Vega. And over there, like,
so
wow.
she was out on the dock most nights, finding stars. And we saw a bunch of shooting stars.
Mm-hmm. I saw some. No, didn't see the fireball that you saw.
I saw one night I was out there for about an hour and I saw seven definite shooting stars and a whole bunch of like, wait, out of the corner of my eye, was that one? Or I'm not so sure. It kind of went fast and it was kind of like some of them do like these long streaks and some of them are like little blips.
Yeah, it's like you kind of go, was that just like my eyes playing tricks on me or did I see something? But if you get someone with you, they can say, oh, yeah, I saw it too.
Right.
But there were definitely ones where I looked up and I thought, like, I saw something and your heart kind of leaps because it's unexpected. I think that's what's so great about like meteors is you don't know what's coming and you're looking for it. And then it goes and it's so quick. And you're like, oh, I saw it. You know,
there's so fast.
Yes.
Right. But yeah, there was beautiful stargazing.
Yeah, very little light pollution.
So little light pollution, and so we could see the Milky Way and so many stars that we can't see from our backyard at home.
Mm.
It was really nice.
I was out there one night, and I was thinking to myself, wouldn't it be really cool if one of those stars, like one of those meteors, went flying by and then took a right turn? I'd talk about it on Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World.
Uh-huh. There were no UFOs.
Sadly.
Actually, one night I did see something I wasn't sure what it was.
Really?
Last night, in fact, I was out on the dock looking up and I saw something blink really bright, almost like a plane light.
Uh-huh.
And then it went off and I was like, wait, was that a plane, a shooting star? What was that? And then it blinked again, like almost in the same spot, but over just a little bit, like a shorter blink.
Really?
And then after that, there was no more blinks. So it wasn't like a plane where you see it blink and then blink and then blink and then blink. This was like two blinks and then nothing else. It was very kind of weird. And it happened twice.
Ooh.
So who
you
knows?
You saw a UAP. Unidentified aerial phenomena.
Yeah.
Exhibiting one of the observables. Sorry.
You are such a geek.
That's from the TV show, Unidentified, which is a silly... They do the silly thing about the five observables of unidentified aerial phenomena. But, yeah, very interesting. Of course, you saw it, and I didn't get to see it. But
yeah. I mean, who knows what it was, but satellite, something...
Something exploding in space.
Could be.
It could, well, I mean, apparently it could be a collision of something in the not in the atmosphere. I mean, like in orbit.
Right.
That sort of thing. So it could be interesting.
But just like two. It was very interesting. Both times it was like two flashes and then that was it.
Interesting. It was, or something rotating and catching the sun.
Maybe. So but we did. We also saw a few like satellites.
Identified a Russian rocket.
A Russian rocket body. Bella said on the one night, and there were a couple that we couldn't identify.
Again,
the app.
The app identified it. You didn't see, like, go, no. That's a Russian rocket body, I could see.
No, but it is cool to have an app that will tell you, like, what's supposed to be going on overhead.
Let me recommend the app, because in case someone wants to know, because that's the one I use on my phone. It's what's really cool is it's called Sky Guide, and there's a function where you can turn on the camera, and so it superimposes on what you're actually seeing through the camera. Superimposes.
Oh, I haven't figured out that function.
I'll have to show you.
But you hold it up, and as you move your phone across the sky, like it moves and it shows you the constellations. You can have it do the lines or without the lines, or with the labels or without the labels.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really cool. And then, like, when you click on a label, it will tell you all about the star, the constellation, whatever you're seeing. It's really...
Well, the cool thing is it shows where the Perseids come from, too. There was one, so I'd searched for it, and so it said Perseids, and it had this little graphic of meteors coming at you from that part of the sky.
Hmm.
So you knew which direction to look to find them.
Although I saw them sort of all over the place.
Yeah, right. It was the peak of the Perseids, so...
Yeah.
So that was a lot of fun. That was cool. The other thing that happened during this week is it was our anniversary.
This is right.
Our 15th anniversary.
And honestly, I actually kind of forgot that was going to be happening.
you're the least like a romantic woman. And I mean that not in a pejorative sense, just you don't care about that stuff.
I mean, it's not that I don't care. It's just that I don't care excessively.
You don't get hung up on it. You don't.
Anyway.
Yeah.
I did time a grocery trip for the day of our anniversary so that I could pick up a cheesecake.
Yes.
At the grocery store. I mean, I was not up for baking in.
Well, we'll talk about the cooking in a minute,
I picked up a cheesecake. So we had a little dessert and that was fun. We had steak for dinner on the grill.
Yeah.
Nothing super fancy.
There was no lobster on this trip.
No.
Lobster would have required a special trip somewhere to buy that. And we, as I found last time we were there, all the lobster that you can get nearby is wicked overpriced for the tourists.
Well, you're not really near the ocean.
No. So, yeah. The kids think if you're on vacation in New England, anywhere in Maine, you have lobster, which might be my fault. So
it might well be your fault.
Yeah.
To be fair, most of the time when we've gone to Maine, and other than at the lake house, we're near the coast.
Yeah, most of the time. But yeah, so 15 years.
Yeah, 15 years.
We were 2 days. So our anniversary is August 13th. So it's 2 days before the Feast of the Assumption.
That would be 3 days.
15th is the Assumption.
Oh, yeah.
So that would be 2 days.
I don't know.
So
I thought it was...
No, because today, so we're recording on the 16th, Sunday, which is not the Feast of the Assumption. Yesterday was the Feast of the Assumption. It's easy to get your days mixed up when you're on vacation. I get that.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, so, the other thing that is also an anniversary of this week, it's the 20th anniversary of World Youth Day Rome, which I went to with my brother and 800 pilgrims from the Archdiocese of Boston. And on the Feast of the Assumption, in the year 2000, the holy year, the Jubilee year, at St. Mary Major Basilica, so the Marian Basilica in the world, I was the lector and cross-bearer for the mass with the cardinal, and I carried the cross as the cross-bearer through the holy door on the Feast of the Assumption at St. Mary Major.
It's pretty cool.
It was pretty cool. Unfortunately, I banged Jesus off the lintel of the holy door.
You know, there's not many people who can claim that honor or dishonor or whatever the heck you call it.
I mean, God zapped the guy who touched the ark while trying to keep it from falling to the ground. So people have died for less. God's punishment. But yeah, I whacked Jesus off the lintel of the holy door at St. Mary Major. But that was quite an honor and quite amazing to think about. That's 20 years ago. Already. It's amazing. Because I'm at that point now where I think when I was a kid and thought of, like when I was 16, say 17, thought of 20 years ago, it seemed like ancient history. You know, when it's 1984, 20 years ago was 1964. That's ancient history. Like the year 2000.
I know, which doesn't seem that long.
It boggles my mind. So
we're getting old. What can I say?
Yes. Never mind 40 years ago. That's a whole nother ball of wax. Speaking of torturing your children, which I wasn't, but you accidentally did something to Bella for her vacation.
So, yeah.
So I
earlier this spring, I was signing her up for classes for the fall, and I found some summer class. I was looking through the summer class catalog and
online classes
online through Homeschool Connections, which is a great Catholic
online homeschool resource.
Yeah,
they offer classes and things. Yeah,
so they're Zoom classes now. They were using a different platform before. Anyway, I noticed that there was a class with Joseph Pierce on Tolkien, Lewis, and the Afterlife. And I might have just been doing that thing where, like, you sign your kid up for the thing that you wish you could do just a little bit.
You're going to enjoy this because I want to do it.
Exactly. So I confess there was a little bit of that, like, oh my gosh, this is so cool. You have to take this because, like, I really want to do it. So I signed her up, even though it wasn't the class. Like, this is the first class that she's been signed up for that wasn't, like, really her idea driving it. And
although she loves Tolkien and Lewis.
She does. She does. And so I thought that she would really enjoy this subject matter. But then I also, like, managed to get confused about the calendar and, she had three classes the week that we were on vacation.
Three of the classes, three of the sessions were during this week. So she had to take time out from her vacation.
Now they were
an
only
an hour at a time.
They were each an hour long session. So this was not a.
Okay, let's compound your error. Okay. Because you also signed her up for.
Well, yeah, there was some. So she's been taking these Shakespeare classes with a friend of mine, who's also. She does a Shakespeare Academy. She's in California and
separate from Homeschool Connections.
But she's independently been offering these sort of Shakespeare seminars. They pick a play, they read through it in four or five sessions. The kids taking parts and acting out scenes. I think she uses a slightly abridged version of the plays. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Isabella really liked the
Macbeth.
She took one about like Twelfth Night or The Tempest. Oh, no, The Tempest.
The Tempest, right.
She liked it, but then she was really excited about being able to do Macbeth.
Yes.
But I, again, had miscommunication with the teacher, and so two of the Macbeth classes were scheduled at the same time as two of the Joseph Pierce classes.
And both during her vacation.
And one of them during the
right,
vacation.
Right.
So I ended up telling her that she could skip
One of the
Joseph Pierce, Tolkien and Lewis classes. Now, these were recorded so she could go back and watch the class later. But she skipped that in order to take the Macbeth class, because the Macbeth class, although the instructor offered to record it, what Isabella really likes about it is acting out the scenes. And so watching other kids act out the scenes wouldn't be nearly as much fun.
It would be more torture for her.
Right. So I let her skip class and then make up the class.
And she missed one of the Macbeth classes.
She missed the Macbeth class the week before we went on vacation.
Right.
So she But, you know, good for her. She actually did the makeup class the next day.
Yeah, she watched the recording.
She watched the recording. She took the quiz. So she was all caught up and she finished the class.
She's more self-motivated than I ever was. What's
no kidding. So I've been really impressed and I have apologized profusely for.
And we will never do that to her again as long as we remember not to.
For signing her up for a class on vacation week. I mean, it's such a 2020 problem, isn't it? Like, I signed my kid up for...
For too many Zoom classes during vacation?
For too many Zoom classes during her vacation week. I mean, that's just not something that could have happened when I was a kid.
Right. But it could have happened for us, because we homeschool. This could have happened to other homeschoolers. Too.
Right. Yeah. I mean, yeah, she had been enjoying the online classes long before everybody else in the country went to online distance learning classes. Like she really, but the thing about Homeschool Connections is these are teachers who specifically designed classes to be taught
in this format.
In this format. So they're designed to be video classes and they really work well.
Yeah. And the kids interact with each other.
They do. And like they frequently can the meeting goes live like 15 or 20 minutes before the class starts. And so the kids like to get on and like chat with each other.
As kids do.
So it's nice because she has this community of peers now that she can like talk about class and talk about other things
and
what's
great is homeschoolers are no longer the weird ones. Don't you worry about socialization? Nobody asks that anymore because everybody is in the same boat now. Nobody's socializing. And in fact, she's probably all the homeschool kids are probably better equipped for the current situation than the regular school kids, which is kind of funny. But I give her all the credit in the world. And I'm not just saying that because I know she listens to our podcast, but I do give her all the credit in the world for having good humor about it. And, you know, they were all so good this week. I have to say, Anthony spent a lot of time moaning because he missed his Legos and the iPad. And there was a period of time where his Kindle broke. It did an automatic update and jammed. And I had to eventually give him my Kindle too, so you could read books on it.
I have to say that was pretty noble of you because I'm not sure I would have given up my Kindle.
Well, I went and I read on my iPad, which is not nearly as good for reading in bed. I do not.
Right.
Because the falling asleep and having it bash you in the nose.
Ouch.
Or worse, drop it on the floor. I'm much less worried about dropping my Kindle in its case on the floor than I am about dropping the iPad as I fall asleep reading. But it was fine. It was fine. So I think that, they all did so well this week. And that's the thing. The nice thing is, you know, they don't whine for the TV. I mean, we got back. They wanted to watch Rebels and Clone Wars. And we're like, no, we're not coming right home and immediately turning on the TV.
And I have to say that the requests for the iPad came pretty quickly after we walked in the door.
Right. But they didn't whine about it while we weren't here. Like, you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
And they found things to do. They played cards. They played chess. Oh, chess. Didn't talk about chess. I have to buy a chess set because we just have so much fun playing chess. Lucy kicked my butt. 7 years old. She totally snookered me in chess. Like, she told. There was this. We played the thing. And I'm kind of like, oh, you know, she doesn't know what she's doing. I've already beat her once. And I'm not going to go easy on her because, you know, she doesn't learn anything that way. And she keeps telling me, I like it when I lose because I learn from you when I lose. She totally snookered me. She was sucking me in. She hustled me. So the good thing there wasn't money on the line. So we're playing and I'm like, and she's moves her queen into this obvious location where like, oh, Lucy, you move your queen where my queen can get it. So boop, sorry. And she's like, that's okay. She moves her bishop, checkmate. She's like, oh, I did that on purpose. I need to get your queen out of the way.
She sacrificed a queen to get checkmate.
Yes.
That's pretty good strategy.
Oh my gosh. She totally like she, and I was like, I had more of her pieces, but didn't matter. She like, and Ben's got really good at it, too. He's got a real strategic mind.
He does. I was certain when I played him I was going to lose. I managed to squeeze in a victory, but it was really tight.
Yeah, I think I saw that one. And I played him once. I beat him once. And then the second time I played him, I think it got all the way down to just a couple pieces, and I think I beat him. Like he had like a pawn and a king, you know, left. But other than that, I didn't have much more than that myself. I think I had like a rook, a bishop, and a king, and maybe a pawn.
And the lake house, the house has a beautiful chess set. It's really nice.
I wish we could find one like that.
I know.
It's the pieces are plastic, so they're not like really fancy. But the board is like a case for the pieces.
It's a nice wooden board, and the pieces are well they're very well molded. They're
big enough, you know. I used to have
beautiful pieces.
I used to have a learner set that had the base of each piece showed the potential moves, the possible like how the piece could move diagonal or the knight's L and that sort of thing, and how many moves, you know, how many spaces it could move, and it was really a nice. Substantial set. I really liked it. I wish I knew whatever happened to it. But yeah, I need to find a good set for us. So there was that, and the other thing we played is Battleship.
Lots of Battleship games. Some Uno, some Go Fish.
Yeah, I taught them how to play Go Fish. They didn't know how to play Go Fish.
They didn't know how to play Go Fish?
No, but they had a lot of fun playing Go Fish on the Star Wars playing cards.
Yeah. And then they brought the 3,000 piece puzzle. And they managed to do about a quarter of it.
At least a quarter. That might have been more like a third or a half even. There was a lot of it. I wish we had space for that, too.
There was a lot of sky left.
Yeah, that's true. So they had plenty to amuse themselves. And then they could just wander around. I mean, Ben, I don't know how many books he listened to.
At least four.
So we both swear that boy has learned to apparate. Because, like, you'll be up on the deck overlooking, you know, the water in the backyard, and you're like, he's down on the dock, and then you turn around and walk in the house, then he's standing there, and you're like, wait a minute.
Or vice versa. He would be outside on the upper deck, and then you'd look, and then he'd be down on the dock.
Like, how did you, you're either apparating between places, or you have a twin, and this is the parent trap.
It was almost creepy.
Is there something you need to tell me about Ben and a potential brother, Melanie?
Nope.
So lots of book reading.
I think everybody read at least one or two books.
Right. So let's talk about, we'll talk about the books we read in a second. Because I do want to talk about that. But let's talk about the food. And one of the things we both considered was the constraints that you're cooking under when you're on vacation. Like, obviously, when you're camping, you have a campfire, and there's obvious constraints. But when you're at a vacation house, especially, so you're away from, like, if you're, like, a, I hate to say, like it's a, it seems sort of pretentious, but, like, we cook from scratch. A lot. And we have our tools, we have our pantry, and we're used to having access to all those things.
And we've invested a decent amount of money on spices and equipment.
Over the years.
I mean, we've been married for 15 years. We've acquired some things. I mean, some of the nice pieces we've had for like 10 or 15 years. So it's not like they're all brand spanking new.
Right. But when we bought a thing, it would be a good thing. And so that would last and that sort of stuff. Right.
And the lake house...
It's a vacation house, so it doesn't have a lot of good cooking utensils. I mean, it's the long and short of it, right?
Right.
I mean, the three times we've been there, we've actually, like, kind of donated stuff. Like, I think we left behind we bought a peeler, a vegetable peeler once.
Right.
Because they had, like, one of those ancient ones.
And I think we've donated...
A paring knife once. Well... In 2017, we left our paring knife there.
No, in 2015, we left our paring knife there.
I'm sorry, in 2015, we left our paring knife there, and we picked it up again in 2017, because it was a good paring knife.
It was one of the set of knives that we got for our wedding.
Yeah.
So, not only was it a really nice knife, but it also had some emotional attachment, and having left it there for 2 years, it was really nice to get it back finally. Right. I was like, oh, yay, my knife!
But we brought some stuff with us, like cooking tongs... one of our chef knives, our paring knife, a vegetable peeler, our can opener, some other tools we ended up not using, needing, but the pots and pans are sort of they're the sort of things you pick up at yard sales to put in your vacation house,
right?
And not having like a rice cooker, so having to cook rice the regular way,
the old fashioned way. Which was fine.
Yeah. I mean, so they have a nice a new gas grill, which was nice. And so we grilled every night.
We grilled every meal. We sort of supplemented with a few things on the stove, like making rice on the stove or making potatoes in the oven.
Or glazed maple glazed carrots.
Maple glazed carrots on the stove, that sort of thing. Green beans one night. But basically we did grilled meats.
Yeah, so steak, pork chop, chicken on skewer.
Sausages.
Sausages, hamburgers and hot dogs. Grilled mushrooms are the new thing for us. That's like, it's so simple, and just like grilling a mushroom changes it in ways that are amazing.
They're pretty good.
Yeah, that was really good. And then plenty of fruit. But
we were light on the fruit and vegetables for the week.
Right.
It was compared to how we eat.
There was a lot of proteins and starches.
Yeah.
And it was kind of hard to come up with, like, you know, so tonight we get home for dinner. It's kind of cooler today. It's in the 60s, rainy. We had tortilla soup because we could have soup. We could make a soup with our homemade stock. And, you know, it was something different. It wasn't just grilled meat again, which was, so it's interesting to kind of, but you, then you have to be creative though with those constraints. Like, cause they didn't have a complete, spice cabinet. So with the chicken, you had to do something. So what did you end up doing with the chicken?
We brought some lemons. And so I started off with thinking, okay, lemon juice. And we brought some soy sauce. We have to have our own soy sauce because
gluten-free for Lucy's allergy.
Because Lucy has wheat allergy. And guess what? There's wheat in most soy sauce.
Right.
So we brought some of our gluten-free soy sauce. So I was basically lemon juice, soy sauce. There was some Worcestershire sauce that somebody had left in the refrigerator. So I threw in a dash of that and some brown sugar and
garlic
and pepper. And that actually worked really well as a marinade.
Actually, yeah, the kids were like, this is the best chicken you guys have made. I think Bella was saying that. It's like, I like this better than any of the other chicken marinades. So we'll have to keep doing that. Maybe even.
I'm not sure if I can recreate it, though.
I know. So, for the mushrooms, it was salt and pepper, and I found some garlic powder in the cabinet, and some olive oil. And then you did something similar with the pork chops.
Actually, I did the exact same marinade. The same marinade with the pork chops.
It worked out well. But even like things like I don't like plain rice. Like, I need something on it, and I didn't want to just put soy sauce on it. So I ended up putting Italian dressing on it. It was really good. I liked it. I did make a note next time we go away. Bring sriracha. Bring Tabasco. Bring, you know, flavorful things. What else did we with the cooking? We picked up a lot of. So we had lunch meats for lunches.
Yes,
but we not everyone had that. Getting the kids, our kids are very much
creatures of habit.
Creatures of habit when it comes to breakfast, especially. Sophie has to have her bagel and coffee every day. It has to be a toasted bagel. And they had an old promotional novelty Boston Red Sox toaster that barely toasts anything, as opposed to
this,
a toaster.
Okay, oven. This toaster, I have to say, it's one of those, like he says, novelty toasters. It makes a Boston Red Sox bee on the toast.
Yeah.
Like a little bee. Right. Yeah.
So they had to kind of roll with it a bit. And go with what was available.
And we ate much more junk food than we usually do.
I did, especially, yeah. My blood sugars were better than they've been in a long time.
Chips and cookies and goldfish and, I mean,
it's vacation.
Right. It's not stuff that we never have. It's just we had it a lot more frequently.
Right, right.
Lemonade.
Yes. Oh, Arnold Palmer's. Lemonade and iced tea.
No, it's so wrong.
It's so good.
You can't do that to iced tea.
Only on vacation. So the other thing I made before we left for vacation, I took it with us. We'd had all of this corn on the cob, and I don't know how we keep ending up with extra corn on the cob when we make it, like the fresh corn.
Because a child will sometimes eat two ears of corn and sometimes eat no ears of corn.
Right. That's right. So we end up getting extra ears of corn, and then they won't eat it. I ended up all this extra corn. So I made corn and black bean salsa, and I've been making it for years. And I ended up, the first time I made it was from a recipe from one of those magazine thingies. That's like a promotional magazine, like a food magazine. That's all these recipes that are, they have corporate ingredients, like they're promotional, like I'm trying to think of like whatever company makes pimentos, like peppers, that was like their brand, like Kraft pimento peppers are the ingredient. Yeah, that, you know, is that sort of thing.
Uh-huh.
So I found it was a cooking demonstration that I think that Pete Campbell, through his work when he worked for the newspaper, had organized or something like that. Anyway, I started with that recipe and I tweaked it over time. And for years, people were like, this is the best corn and black bean salsa I've ever tasted. You should bottle this, sell it. I mean, it was kind of funny. And I think it might be in that binder, actually. I should dig it out. Kind of lost track of the original recipe. But I said, you know, how hard can it be? So I made some more corn and black bean salsa. So take the corn off the cob, you drain and rinse some black beans, cut up some tomatoes. I got tomatoes from the garden, some red onion, cilantro, jalapeno pepper, lime juice, some salt. Boom. Mix it all together. Very simple. The thing is, I'm kind of sad because it made a lot of it because there was a lot of corn. Should have froze some of it. And I ended up having to throw a lot of it away because no one else was eating it.
Yeah, that's the kind of salsa that I think is really good the first day, and then after that, it's not really quite as...
I think the lime juice, the acid, starts to break it down, and it's not the sugars in the corn aren't as good. They start to get starchy, and it's just not as good after a while. We should mention the garden. So we were kind of afraid, being gone for a week, that the garden, especially because we'd had a heat wave, that the garden would wither while we were gone. And there were a lot of...
I opened the back door and peered outside when we got home, and I said, "Oh my gosh, it's like red! Right. All the tomatoes had just popped."
Well, that's they were all on the verge of being ripe just as we were leaving, but they weren't ripe enough to pick yet. And so when we came back, it was such a pleasant surprise that they were all red and ready. And the disappointment was the eggplants.
My eggplants, something got into them and ate my eggplants. I think it's
the skunk I've been seeing on the security cameras.
It could have been a squirrel.
Yeah, but there were two skunks that I saw on security cameras during the week, in the middle of the night, heading in that direction. So they could have been them, too. But yeah, skunks or vermin. Because it would have been nice to get those eggplants. We'll think of some way to protect them next time. But yeah, lots of tomatoes. So that's really awesome. So I'm happy to see that those survived. So let's talk about our vacation reading. I watched an episode of Unidentified, which is the History Channel UFO show, reality quote unquote show. I think I watched an episode of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., like the second to last of the series. Like they've had the series finale. I haven't watched it yet, the finale yet, but I read a couple more of the Dresden Files books.
Mm-hmm.
The most recent one was it was called Blood Rites. Not my favorite. Not your favorite.
No,
but still pretty good. And the interesting worldview when it comes to the ideas of men and women and love and marriage and intimacy and that sort of stuff. Kind of an interesting, almost Catholic way of seeing things, although very much not Catholic clearly. Like not, they're not
right.
Butcher is not clearly not coming from a Catholic point of view, but you can see he's almost onto something
right
in that. So
It's one of those, it's novels. Like you sort of have to read it because you can't skip it, and there's a lot of really good character building stuff that happens.
Yeah.
The
same qualifiers. There's a lot of violence and sexual innuendo and information and that sort of thing. So, be warned when you read it. I've picked up some new books. So I'll talk about those next week because I think I should be finished with the one I'm reading now by then. And then I've been playing a game on the iPad in Apple Arcade. It's an Apple Arcade game, so you subscribe $5 a month and you get all these games called Little Orpheus, which is a lot of fun. It takes place in 1960s, I think, sort of this science fiction-y golden era of science fiction story about a cosmonaut who travels to the center of the Earth and comes back 3 years later and has to explain to his communist superiors where he's been and why he's lost little Orpheus, the nuclear rocket that was powering his ship. And it's so you're basically reliving his tale as it goes. And it's this, you know, crazy adventure. It's really well done. The graphics are really nice. And it's kind of a fun story. Not the hardest game in the world. It's it's like a platformer, like a side scrolling platformer. And it's mainly about what's that?
I have no idea what that means.
Oh, classic. Like the character is running from the left side of the screen to the right side of the screen, and everything kind of scrolls under him. So as he moves, everything's kind of moving under him from right to left. And so he has various obstacles he has to get through and over and that sort of thing. And that's generally what it means. And so it's more about telling a story than it is about intricate gameplay, but it's fun. So you picked up a book that for read aloud at bedtime for a vacation read aloud.
Oh, yes. I have been thinking for a while that the kids would really enjoy Terry Pratchett's We Free Men. That's W-E-E.
And it's free, not three.
Free. Yes.
It's a Discworld from his Discworld.
Yeah. So the Terry Pratchett's Discworld, I don't think are especially kid friendly, although some people don't seem to mind some of the innuendos because they figure they go over kids' heads. But there's a spinoff sort of Discworld series for young adults about a character called Tiffany Aching, who's a teenage witch. The fourth and fifth books get kind of dark and a lot more adult situations, but the first three are just kind of lighthearted and fun, with a little bit of hints at sort of dark situations, but nothing that's too heavy for the kids. Anyway, it's a really fun,
very funny,
very funny. Lots and lots of laugh out loud, kids rolling on the floor, giggling.
So the funny thing is there's pixies, so little fairy type creatures, but they're picked like P-I-C-T, like Scottish.
Like they're little six
tiny
inch
Scotsmen.
They're little 6-inch tall Scottish warriors in kilts with blue tattoos all over their bodies, and who love to fight and drink and steal and
completely ridiculous, completely Scottish stereotype, and hysterical.
They're so funny.
The kids and I were all in stitches, especially hearing you try to do the voices.
I am not very talented when it comes to doing voices, but I do best shot.
Oh, it's funny. It's funny when you do it. It is quite humorous. Very funny. And they're loving it.
It's been a fun, lighthearted vacation read aloud.
Yes. And then the other book you read this week?
The book I read, which is now being passed around among the older kids, was a spinoff of Diane Duane's Young Wizards series. This one is called The Book of Night with Moon, and it follows the adventures of some cat wizards. So in Diane Duane's wizarding world, not only humans are not the only intelligent species on Earth who can perform wizardry, but cats and
whales
and dogs and I think eagles all have wizards. So this follows the adventures of a cat wizard named Riao. And there's a made up cat language, and so she appears to the humans to be an ordinary cat. She's got two humans that she lives with, but she and her cat companions are responsible for maintaining the world gates, which happen to coexist with Grand Central Station, which is kind of fun. And so they go on adventures, and very interesting, very well done, and a fun little spinoff series.
Nice.
Now Bella has devoured it, and I think Sophie's on the
and is Anthony next?
I don't know that he is exactly aware that it exists. I think some of it might be a little bit more mature than but I don't know.
Okay.
If he gets his hands on it, it's not like the end of the world.
Okay.
He's really involved with his Rangers Apprentice books right now.
Oh, yes. That's the new series that you got for him to get started with.
Yeah, I he was so bored and so frustrated. And I was thinking, okay, I just need to find a series of books that has a whole lot of books in it. So I went to my fabulous Facebook friends, and three or four different people recommended the Ranger's Apprentice series. And so I figured I'd give it a shot. People whose judgment I trust with small, some people, some of the recommendations were not quite age appropriate. So, yes, some of my friends mean well, but it's been a long time since they were nine, or they don't have 9 year olds, or they've got fuzzy memories because it's been a long time since they read these books and they kind of forgot the inappropriate bits.
It happens. I've done that with movies.
Yeah. So I try very carefully to not overexpose the kids, but.
Yeah. Yeah. But those seem so far. He seems to like it.
Yeah, he's happy to have a new series. He is a bookworm who devours books, and he...
Oh, yeah. We have a series of photos of him reading in various places throughout the vacation house.
Yeah.
Upside down, laying across things, under tables.
Yeah, perched on stools, standing in the stairwell, like leaning against the banister.
At one point, I caught him feeling his way around the house, like the arm extended, so as not to run into things, so he didn't have to look up from the book while he was reading. Like, you are banned from reading while walking on the street. Do not do that.
I have an uncle who claims to have read while driving, like put the car on cruise control and prop the book on the steering wheel. I'm amazed that he is still alive, but yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about a Catholic topic. I had just an insight I wanted to talk about from last week's gospel. This was the Jesus walking in the water with Peter. And one of the things that occurred to me is Jesus calls Peter out of the boat. You know, Peter, come out in the come out of the water. And so Peter does. Like, he trusts Jesus, comes out of the boat and starts walking on water. Like, he's literally doing it. And then he gets afraid and starts to sink. And I'm thinking, like, what would it feel like to be that moment when Jesus says, come out of the boat. Come out, step out of the boat. Peter's a fisherman. He knows how this works, you know? And, like, I can't walk on water. That's not possible. I see you doing it, but I can't do it. And I was just thinking, like, you know, to take that lesson and extend it, it can sometimes seem like God is asking us to do something that's impossible. Come and do this impossible thing. But if he's asking us to do it, he's going to give us the means to do it if we have faith. But you have to have faith. When you lose that faith, when you doubt that he's going to do this for you, that's when things start to fall apart. You got to, like... Now, there's the trick, and it's easy to take this too far, because there's the trick is, how do you know God's actually asking you unless he speaks in an audible voice, you know, if God really is asking you to do this thing. So there's
how do you know it's not your own delusions of grandeur?
So that's the discernment part of it. And so you have to, you know, balance things off there. But I was kind of struck by this idea of, like, God asked, like, Jesus asked him, step out of the boat. Step onto the water. I'm gonna help you do this. You can do this. And when he doubted and started to sink, Jesus didn't go, oh, should have had faith. No, he pulled him out, you know. He said, no, come on, it's fine. It's fine. I got you.
Right. There's a gentleness and there's no recriminations. Well, there's a slight recrimination. Why did you?
Well, it was not so much recrimination as just a lesson. Like, you know, I gotcha. You don't need to doubt. You shouldn't doubt. I've got you. I mean, sort of like a parent. Don't worry. I've got you. Like, there were several times this week where I had, you know, a child in the water. And it's like, do not worry. Don't worry. I have you. I've got you. You're going to make it.
Yeah, a lot of parenting is like that, isn't it?
Yes. Assuring them that you're there and you're going to help them and you're not going to let the bad thing happen. God forbid that the bad thing happens.
Unless, of course, you sign them up for 2 Zoom classes at the same time.
Well, the other thing, the last thing I wanted to mention was the other reading was about the, you know, the earthquake, the fire, you know, the disasters, and the, what was it? My mind blank. Was it Jeremiah or Ezekiel? Elijah. And it was God was found in the still small voice. God wasn't in the thunder. God wasn't in the earthquake. God was in the still small voice. And you asked me about, like, why was God in this small voice?
No, I asked you, why is it Elijah?
You asked why it was Elijah?
Yeah.
Oh, well, it was because it was from the Old Testament.
No. Why I was talking about the transfiguration, and why is Elijah of all the prophets in the Old Testament? Why
is it Elijah and Moses?
Why Elijah?
Right. Well, that was because Elijah was taken up into heaven in bodily form. He was assumed in heaven, essentially, taken up on the fiery chariot. So he didn't die, and he was going to come back. To lead the people and to bring the Messiah.
Well, he's still expected to come back. That's why people leave the
right,
seat
well,
for Elijah at the Seder table, right?
Right, the Jewish people expect him to bring the Messiah. So in this case, he's at the Transfiguration with the Messiah. So that's partly the sign of the Messiah, along with Moses, and because Jesus is, Elijah is a type of Jesus, as is Moses a type of Jesus. So there's that too. But so I was thinking of the whole thing about the God was found in the still small voice. It's like, why is he in the still small voice and not in the thunder or in the earthquake? And that's in all the other religions, the gods were found in the big events, in the natural disasters or in the floods or in the fires, that's what God was found.
But God in the Old Testament is found in all of those places. I mean, like he does appear in the pillar of fire, and he, smites Sodom and Gomorrah, and there's floods and earthquakes and all sorts of things when God appears.
He's the God of both the big things and the little things,
right?
The important events and the small events.
What struck me as we were listening to that reading is actually that, it says there was a fire, but God wasn't in the fire. And yet the fire exists because God calls it forth. The earthquake exists because God calls it forth.
But he's not in the fire like he was in the fire of the burning bush or the fire of the burning pillar, with the Israelites in the desert. I think that what it means he wasn't in the fire. The fire wasn't God's messenger. That wasn't a message from God. It's just fire. And it wasn't like sometimes fires are just fires. They're not a message from God. Sometimes an earthquake is just an earthquake. That sort of thing. It's not.
Except in a sense, there's almost an irony there, because clearly the fire is there so that God cannot be in it. The earthquake is there so that God cannot be in it. You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
It's not a coincidence that there are a fire and an earthquake at that moment in time.
Right.
They're there in order to teach Elijah a lesson. But
yes, but when they say God is not in the fire, that they mean a very particular thing.
No, I know. I was thinking about this. There's a sort of a situational irony there.
Yeah, there is a bit of an irony that, God wasn't in the fire. He just lit it.
Right.
He wasn't in the earthquake. He just shook it. Although God doesn't cause evil.
Well, is the earthquake evil? I mean, if it doesn't destroy anything, then...
If it doesn't destroy anything. It's a natural event. An earthquake is just tectonic plates rubbing against each other. Yeah.
That just happened to happen right as God said, go to the mouth of the cave.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just happened. Anyway, so I thought there was some interesting thoughts about that. Nothing too profound, I guess. It's been a long week. Vacation is restful, but coming back from vacation can be stressful, I think.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of logistics going on between moving a household from one location to another. There's lots of things that need to be packed,
and then re-entering into life and all the things that are going to have to happen this week.
Unpacking and tidying up. And
all the appointments that were scheduled for after vacation. And all the things that we said, we'll do that after vacation.
Right. Yeah, it's going to be a week.
Yeah.
Starting with an appointment at 9 a.m.
Yes. Which means we need to wrap this up.
Indeed.
So, as we do, we want to take a moment to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create Raising the Bets, including Patrick M., Don B, Anita H, Nathan M, and John P. Their generous donations at sqpn.com/give make it possible for us to continue raising the bets and all the shows at StarQuest. You can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. So that's it from us. If you have any feedback for us, let us know by commenting at sqpn.com/bets. That's B-E-T-T-S. Or the SQPN Facebook page, facebook.com/StarQuestMedia. Or send an email to bets@sqpn.com. And I'll put links relevant from our discussion on our show notes at sqpn.com. Remember to like Raising the Bets on the StarQuest Facebook page, retweet us at Twitter, where we're at SQPN, leave us comments, and engage with us on social media. We'd love to see you there. Until next time, I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
Thank you for listening to Raising the Bets on StarQuest.